as men, the doing is hard to break.
Yes.
Your partner will reach up to participate, right, and you have to smack their hand. When she's taking from me, she'll just like, I'll reach up, I'll be like, and it just smacks my hand down, and I'm like, oh yeah, right, I'm the fuck toy right now.
Yeah.
And like, loving it.
Yeah, and loving it. And then when you can really drop into that space, I honestly have never felt anything more nourishing sexually than being in a totally non-doing, pleasurable state.
If you're happy with the same old ways of dating,
if you enjoy sucking at communication,
and you have no desire to improve your romantic life, then our podcast might not be for you.
But if you want some out-of-the-box ideas to deepen your current relationships,
broaden your sexual horizons,
develop a better understanding of yourself,
or learn more about non-monogamy,
then you've come to the right place. I'm Jace.
I'm Emily.
And I'm Dedeker.
And this is the Multiamory Podcast. On this episode of the Multiamory Podcast, we're talking to Cosmo Means and Melissa Mango about their work regarding pleasure-based touch and consent. Mm-hmm. And we're here on, this is going to come out the day before our final show of our North American tour.
Our LA show.
Our LA show, the final one. So we hope to see you all there.
Mm-hmm.
And also, we're recording this right after RelateCon, which we just attended and presented along with Cosmo and Mango at RelateCon over the weekend here in Boise, Idaho.
Beautiful Boise, Idaho.
Yeah, it is
Boise.
Beautiful. Yeah. You can't see it, dear listeners, but we have a beautiful scene outside.
Uh-huh.
It's lovely.
So let's just get right into it.
Yeah.
We attended a workshop that Cosmo and Mango did that was connected to the company Happy Touch. Is that correct?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Cool.
Yeah.
So
a snippet.
Yeah. That was just the tiniest little appetizer.
Right. Yeah, and we all got to participate in it, and it was fantastic, and we've been talking about it for like a day since then.
Yeah,
for sure. Yeah. So it just kind of to start the scene, can you tell us a little about yourselves and what you do, why you were here, etc., and you're about to actually do couple classes after RelateCon as well, so kind of dive into that a little bit.
You want to go first?
Yeah, absolutely. Awesome. I came down from Canada. And I'm a somatic sex educator in Canada. I also come from a history of being a chef. I've opened a number of restaurants, all health-related and pleasure-based as well.
Mm-hmm. Nice. Cool.
I'm visiting Boise, Idaho for the first time. Came by invite from beautiful Melissa Mango. And we've collaborated. So we did two workshops together at RelateCon. One was based on relating games that that Mango's been practicing and doing in workshops for quite some time.
A couple years, yeah.
The other one is, like we said, a little snippet of some work that we do with Happy Touch. Happy Touch is a company that I have in Canada with my wife, Caitlin K. Roberts, and we're launching an app with that company connecting sex educators with clients.
Nice.
And so we also are a platform that basically brings anything around pleasure and consent and sexuality to the forefront, making it really accessible. And yeah, we're here, we're loving it, we're having fun. We're about to do a 2-day workshop, a full intensive.
Oh wow.
Kind of a 2-day version of the snippet we did at RelateCon.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
A lot more.
And just like, to go into it a little bit further to give people more opportunities to explore and more time for processing. As you see, you've been talking about it for the last day.
Yeah.
We've been doing
there's
a lot of processing.
That comes out with very simple stuff that we're working on.
Yeah, and that was only like an hour and a half that we got to spend with you. So
Yeah, so that's a little snippet of me. If there's anything I missed, let me know. But Mango,
sure, we'll
maybe
get to it.
I'm Melissa Mango. I am starting to get my voice back. I'm originally from Boise. I actually moved here like in my early, like right out of high school, and then ended up, you know, going and actually I was a private chef as well. I've had a restaurant in LA, Redondo Beach, actually.
Oh,
had a
cool.
restaurant. And that's how kind of I met Cosmo. We worked as a team in that whole pleasure-based raw food scene.
Yeah.
And and that's a huge story. But
cool.
That's a fun story.
That's a really fun story
not
too.
For today.
But not today, yeah. So out of chefing and the raw food scene, I became a clinical hypnotherapist because I was really helping people shift patterns in their life around you know, diet and exercise and, you know, how they want to take care of their bodies and stuff. And that turned into something different. Clients started visiting me around issues with their sexuality, hangups. I don't know if it's just something I kind of draw in or people feel really comfortable with me. But when I started helping people really explore their sensuality and open up and shift things on that level, I thought, wow, this is way more exciting to talk about than kale and the protein content.
Yeah.
And
well, that is pretty exciting stuff.
That is really exciting.
Let's do it justice.
Yeah, it's really exciting. But something else was inside of me of like, wow, this is something I actually want to study beyond my own training for myself or exploration. So then I went to San Francisco Sex Information School and got some basic things because I didn't know how I was going to use the education or where I was going to go. Was I going to become a sex therapist? You know, I didn't really know. So I started there and then realized, you know, combining the sex education, which was pretty basic, and then combining the hypnosis, there was another element I was exploring and just seeing naturally. And that's where the somatic sex education came in. So that's like a body-based, erotic, pleasure-based practice.
Wow.
And then Cosmo and I were kind of met up at another point, reconvened again, and thought, wow, let's continue, you know.
Yeah, we did the intimacy training program, which is like a week-long mini version, kind of like the snippet we did at RelateCon. Mm-hmm. This was a mini version of intimacy training that we did with a mentor of ours, Kaff and Jesse. And we just both went, whoa, this is our work. Huh. This is what we're supposed to be doing. Mm-hmm. And just collectively and individually decided to dive deeper and take the full somatic sex educator training program, which is hosted in Canada. And then the American version is sexological bodywork training,
which is based in San Francisco. And I really wanted to study with Cosmo and Kaffin specifically. And so I ended up going to Canada for that training. But so I have a private practice in Nevada City, California. And I also travel a bit, you know, RelateCon and go to different places and bring, you know, what I do to little communities. I also do Sensuous Society, which is a kind of a community that I started of people that want to explore their sensuality. So we get together and have like events. We learn things like how to do rope, how to make it safe and exciting.
Oh, wow.
We explore all kinds of things, really. How to take care of your cycle and really make the choice if you want to become a parent, for example. So I bring in other experts because it's all things that I'm interested in, and I would really like to mix it up and have other people present to the community. So
that's amazing.
Very
cool.
Yeah. You were mentioning something when we were talking before about that, and I thought this was really cool, but the idea of, you know, a lot of people out there might be interested in trying some sort of kink BDSM something,
right?
Like some rope play, like you mentioned, or spanking or some kind of, you know, power exchange, but that when you Google that, you get these really extreme things, or you go to like an open house type thing at a dungeon or something.
And you're like,
and it's people performing these really intense scenes. And you're just like, I'm terrified.
Or you watch 50 Shades of Grey and you get this whole other idea of what it's all about.
So I like bringing in teachers that really teach you maybe like how to do the knots and then how to be connected with your partner, which looks very different than the scenes that you see in a dungeon. Right. Like how to get in your body and actually build intimacy using this object like a rope or like a, you know, a switch or a flogger or something like that. So that way you can choose the experience you want to have. You can have something very light and sensual and just play with like that, or you can make it really extreme. But the point is to have the full buffet to pick from.
Right.
And it's starting out small by offering people an opportunity to explore these things. This is all fairly new territory for me as well. And which is why I like the accessibility, because I had images of what I thought kink and BDSM and rope play was about prior. And then when I was exposed to it, I was like, wow, this is a completely different thing. There's tons of intimacy, tons of connection, tons of opportunity to slow down and feel into your body, which is a lot of what we practice personally and teach about. So the first time I ever played with ropes was actually with Mango after our training, and you hosted something with Max from Seattle.
Right. So I had a specialist, you know, come in and teach, and then I was really excited to
show. And she brought these ropes and this stuff, and she's like, here, let me show you. And she like...
And it was nothing like elaborate.
No, it was all decorative. It was like, and then I just fell in love. I was like, wow, like those ropes look really beautiful on your body. And it was very decorative. And interestingly enough, I just was very excited about that. I shared that. And it showed me the stigma around that, because what I got back was people unfriending me on Facebook, saying you shouldn't be posting that kind of stuff. And it was, this was just a picture of Mango's back with decorative rope on it. So I found that very interesting, and I had to then again reflect on how I present in social media in regards to various things, just to be aware of the stigmas that are attached to some of this stuff and start to slowly, hopefully, break down. And that's where the accessibility piece comes in as well.
Yeah, I know for myself that for so long when I was younger, when I was trying to figure out what am I into, what kind of sexual being am I, what kind of kinks do I have, that I definitely had this perception with kink or any kind of BDSM or bondage or anything. And I think this was probably very much led by mainstream pornography. My perception was like, it has to be extreme,
right?
Like if you're going to enjoy this, you have to enjoy a lot of pain, a lot of intense sensation, a lot of extreme subjugation. And like, that's what it is to enjoy this.
Right.
And so for a number of years in my early 20s, I was like, okay, I guess I'll try to do it and like kind of try to find the parts that I like and kind of endure the rest, you know, without realizing that you, something that the both of you mentioned in your workshop, that the idea of there being a palette of sensation within any
the
kind of touch
palette.
Exactly, whether it is, you know, rope play or bondage or not, just any kind of sensual touch, that there's this huge spectrum that, again, I think that a lot of people don't realize and that it's okay to find this more nuanced, more complex experience and sensation within these experiences,
right? Yeah, and beautiful. People have a choice to really decide where they want to take the sensation, what really works for them. That's beautiful.
I really quickly want to take a little bit of a sidestep because I want to talk about the name of your company, Happy Touch. Because I'll be honest, when I first read, you know, the name of your workshop was Happy Touching, colon, like exploring taking for your pleasure, something like that. And when I read Happy Touching, I was like, this sounds like a kid's workshop maybe, but like it involves touching. And so I'm like, I don't know about that. but then like when I gave it another look and I was like, okay, no, Happy Touch, like something that's like positive and pleasurable and not necessarily sexual. So tell me a little bit behind your decision to name your company that way.
Yeah, that's a really, really fantastic question. So it came to me about, I was taking Like a Pro, which is Betty Martin's training for educators to learn about the Wheel of Consent, which is a type of language that Betty and chart really that Betty developed and teaches. And so this is, there's a lot of the work that we do is based as a foundation in the Wheel of Consent. And you can put links up to Betty's work and there's tons of footage on there. And so I was doing the training and I was just like in my body exploring and being like, what are we really practicing here? What is this that we're doing? And even though we're exploring sexuality, the reality is that sexuality is a gateway to having more life force and thriving in the rest of your life. And so as I was feeling into that, I'm like, well, how is this accessible to people? What is this really about? And it's about just feeling good about touch. And so much of our lives, we maybe are touched non-consensually. Maybe we haven't even created the idea of consent within our body and created this idea that we're autonomous beings, that we also have to have trust with ourselves. And by creating some boundaries for ourselves, our bodies trust us. And then once we are within our boundaries of consent, then we can explore this happy touch. And it doesn't necessarily have to be sexual. And I'm glad that you brought up about children. I have young children and I teach them these principles too, just in regards to brother and sister touching in a gentle way. Don't touch people when you're angry. Touch people when you're happy and ask them if they're allowed. And so this is, you know, I love the saying that like everything we needed to learn, we learned in kindergarten. And like not separating ourselves as adults, you know, that sure, we as adults have different types of touch exploration, but that it also should be playful. We should embrace our inner child, that our bodies are like, our bodies are playgrounds. And so let's have happy touch in our playgrounds. Let's find language to be able to explore that type of touch. So that's where it came from. And that's, like the name was really accessible. And eventually maybe there will be modules for teenagers and children and different different levels, that it won't just be kind of connected to sexuality.
Right. Yeah. Wow.
Mm-hmm. Be great.
Yeah, I feel like that could be so needed.
Yeah, yeah,
for sure. Absolutely. Yeah.
Get them while they're young.
Yeah, we got to start with breaking the stigma with adults before we could ever approach, you know, obviously adults then have the opportunity to take that and teach their own children.
Yeah.
And then eventually, potentially, there'll be that opening to bring that into schools or, you know, there's a lot of opportunity there.
Yeah, definitely.
And there's a lot around like consent. You and I were talking about that this morning, is that it's not just about accessing and finding a yes. It's really about really feeling what am I actually wanting? Is it a yes? Is it a maybe? Is it a no? You know, consent isn't about searching for the yes.
It's or permission. It's about like mutuality.
Huh. Yeah. Right. It's a conversation together. You're accessing truth.
Yeah.
Really.
Yeah. 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 Beautiful.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's fantastic. I was, just the thing about children made me think of, there was a consent workshop that I went to that was related to like a cuddle party group. Mm-hmm. And they did sort of a consent training for educators. And one of the things that they talked about was how from a very early age, we're taught that we don't have autonomy. Because there's the like, go hug your Aunt Susan.
Yeah,
it's like, I don't want to. And it's like, you don't get a choice. Go hug her anyway, or go give her a kiss, or whatever it is.
And that those messages land in the body, and then they play out in your life. Like I can't, if someone else, you know, makes a decision for me on some level, you know, you've kind of follow that.
Yeah. You have to.
And then you see how that plays out. Right.
Right. Yeah. Definitely.
And it really goes back to this concept. I mean, something that I really love to, well, first of all, it really means something in my body, but it's around caring. It's like, do I care what this body that I'm coming into contact with feels? That's what consent is. So that we were talking about that mutuality. So why as adults would we want to hug a child that wasn't feeling like they wanted to hug us?
Right.
Totally.
Right.
What is that about?
You know? Definitely.
And do we want to allow space for people to come to us?
Yeah.
Not for us to force ourselves on people.
Totally.
But just find that mutuality of coming together. What a beautiful thing when a child runs to you and hugs you because they want to.
There's a big difference between that and the other thing.
I feel like that's a good segue.
Right. So during the workshop that we did yesterday, was that yesterday or was that two days ago?
Okay,
it all runs together. I can't even keep
yesterday was a bit of a blur.
One of the things that we talked about was like when addressing consent and when you're asking someone else to that you want to do something with them is first getting clear on the question of like, who is this for? Mm. And that was something that I'd actually heard before when someone was talking about with kink stuff. If someone asks like, oh, you know, would you like to do this type of thing together? And the question they respond with is, well, who is this for? Is this for me or for you? And then based on that answer, it might affect how they would answer and how they'd proceed. And I was just sort of like, and that makes sense, I guess, but it's a little bit confusing and seems very, I don't know, inorganic or something. But then during your workshop, you presented it in a way that to me at least felt much more conversational, much more organic, and just kind of working that understanding into the way you're talking about stuff. I was wondering if you could kind of give us like that sort of quick rundown on sort of the may I versus would you like.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You like me to take that?
Go for it.
I love this one. And the most simple description of this is when one person offers to give someone a massage.
Right.
And this could happen on in a club, a dance club.
At a cuddle party, just at a dinner party, even with a partner. I mean, just sitting watching a movie.
Right.
And one person's idea of what the massage looks like might be very different from what the other person's idea of what the massage looks like. So someone says, would you like a massage? And a really natural question could be, who is this for? Whereas we don't often ask that. Instead, the person that's receiving the massage might say, sure. Maybe they don't actually want a massage. And if you ask the question, who is it for? Then maybe the person that's receiving the massage might say, well, if this is for me, I want you to massage my feet for 10 minutes.
Mm.
And then the person giving the massage would say, is that a gift that I want to give? Was that my intention in offering the massage?
Mm.
So if the person that's offering the massage actually wants to touch your body for their pleasure, then the question should be, may I give you a massage for my pleasure? In that case, you are then giving them a gift. You're giving them the gift of your body for them to touch however they want within reason, you know, within your boundaries. You could say then, yes, I will give you that gift, but please avoid my breasts and my throat. Or something specific. You would give them some parameters in which that gift can take place. Rather than getting into this position where you say, sure, and they're giving you a shoulder massage, which is turning into sort of a upper breast massage, and their fingers are sort of dancing closer to your nipples, but you didn't really say that, and the next thing you know, they're trying to have sex with you.
Yeah. Right.
And even if this is your partner, so you might be like, I want to watch the movie, fuck off.
When this was happening in the workshop, when you were discussing this, I was like, yeah, this happens so often to me, and then all of a sudden, there's a dick in my ass.
And that's where when we really get down to it, we talk about like that yes, without clarifying whose it's for, there's murkiness.
Yeah, definitely.
Around even within trusting your own body. Because you said yes, and then you're like, I don't want the dick in my ass right now. Yeah. But somehow I ended up here.
Yeah.
And then you get into a place of like potentially even with partners being in a victim-victimizer position that is really muddy and can create a lot of stuff that just by asking those simple questions with, maybe doesn't seem organic at first. Maybe it's a little clunky in language at first, but it's way clunkier to then feel like you've somehow either victimized yourself or been victimized by a partner, new friend, lover, or whatever. Yeah. So that little bit of clunkiness in the beginning to clarify who it's for can create so much fun too, because like, when you give yourself as a gift to someone and you know that you're giving your body as a gift to them for their pleasure, what I've found is that all of a sudden there's this beautiful purpose, this effortless purpose that, just being is enough.
Yeah,
just being is giving a gift of pleasure to someone. But unless you've clarified that, you may not even in your own body really understand what you're doing.
Well, I feel that leads into something that I want to talk about, which is that specifically this workshop that you facilitated was specifically about the act of taking for your own pleasure. And even that phrase, I think, can be so activating to so many people, the idea of like taking something from someone else.
That's why I chose it.
It's provocative for sure. And I think, you know, again, like in the massage example, the idea of, you know, are you giving me a gift of like you truly want to massage my shoulders and get rid of my tension and make me feel good? Or do you want to feel my body? And I think it's really interesting, you know, something that I think I uncovered in the workshop is that that's not necessarily a bad thing as long as it's communicated about. That again, if a partner is at least clear with me, I want to give you a, like, may I give you a massage? Because like, I love your body and I really want to touch it and feel it. And it's really arousing to me. And then again, me giving me the opportunity to be like, can I give that gift right now? Like, can I let you take right now or not? And if I can, then it's like, yeah, that's great. And again, like it doesn't create that sense of like, oh, this person kind of tried to take advantage of me in this situation. So I know that you've talked about the fact, you know, you've referenced it's Betty Martin, right? In the Wheel of Consent, and that taking is part of the Wheel of Consent. Do you mind just giving a really quick and dirty sense of how taking fits into like the other ecosystem of this particular modality?
Yeah, so we have, I'm a really visual person, so that always helps.
We have your
helps.
Chart with you here.
So yeah, we've got the Wheel of Consent, and there's four quadrants, just like a pie. There's four slices, right? And there's serve, take, allow, and accept. And then in service, you're always, that's always going to benefit others, okay? And you're always going to be saying, yes, I will. This is what I'm giving the gift, right?
Okay.
When you're saying yes, I will, if you can give it.
Yes. And then if you're in the taking quadrant, the action is for yourself. So oftentimes we'll be taking, but really we're trying to serve. Does that make sense? And you're always going to say, may I, because you're asking for permission. You're asking for access. In allowing, did you have something?
Yeah, just to clarify that the muddiness sometimes in when you're giving an action. So the action when you're in service is going to the to someone that's accepting that service. Mm-hmm. When you're taking, it's going to someone that's allowing you to take. So the action is going in one way. With service, you're giving the gift to the person that's accepting. And with taking, actually, the gift is going from the allower to you. So the murkiness comes in when people go towards an action with the guise, let's say, of service when they're actually taking.
Yeah.
Right.
Like the massage example that turns into actually say, just feeling your body.
I'm presenting this option as though it's a service to you.
Right, and then it's like...
But it's not a service. I'm taking from you for my pleasure.
Yeah. Right.
That's happens. Where it gets muddy and you get outside of consent.
The example that comes to my mind, to think of something that's maybe more directly sexual than a massage, is I think about, you know, if a partner asks me, may I go down on you, for instance. Mm-hmm. And I've definitely gotten some murkiness there where it's like, sometimes I've had a partner approach me and it truly is like service. Like, I want to pleasure you. I want to give you an orgasm or 10 or whatever, you know? And then sometimes where it has been like, I want to go down on you, but I want that to be the warm up to me fucking you or whatever, which again, maybe like, maybe I'm feeling like, yeah, that's great. Or maybe I'm not. But I don't know. Have you ever experienced that where?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, it's difficult to say no sometimes, and we got into that obviously too, but when it is under this like, well, I'm about to do you a service, I'm about to go down on you, which feels good, right? But maybe you're in a space where you don't want that, and yet
it's like sometimes I'm in a space where it's like, yeah, I'll take you going down
on me, but I don't want to have sex with you
you know, along those lines. That murkiness there of like, I want to say yes to this, but maybe the actual request I should be saying no to.
Well, and the idea that it's something that I feel so often is that if somebody is doing me a service, I have to service them as well. I have to automatically give them a blowjob then later or let them fuck
me.
Exactly. Because it has to be equal in that way. And I can't just simply be a being who it allows themselves to like just be given pleasure with nothing in return to the other person.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And often with, you know, when someone is saying, may I go down on you, and you can clarify and say, well, who is this for? Is it for you? Then you might set a time container and you say, yeah, you can go down on me for your pleasure for 10 minutes, I actually have a business meeting or I have something going on.
I only want it to be this.
I'm not consenting to sex after, and I'm not agreeing to necessarily pleasure you as well.
Yeah.
But if you want to pleasure me for 15 minutes, great, have at it. Right. And if it is for you, then you'll know it's for you if you can give them direction.
Yeah.
Interesting.
I would like you to go faster, slower, please. And if their feelings get hurt, then it really wasn't for you.
No.
Right.
And so then you'll know if you give direction and they say thank you, then you know it's really for you. So that's something that you can kind of negotiate to and build that language with your partner. Not everyone's going to have this language. So
And it can be sexy too. It doesn't have to be like, okay, we're going to follow this and, and I'm going to shame you for not following the thing. It can be like, ooh, I want to try this really hot thing with you. I want to really get into like our dynamics and like, you know, you can make it playful.
Consent can be sexy.
Of course.
And the training each other too with your partners too, and even friends too, training each other around this is really beautiful.
It's really great. I wanted to get into it, and this is potentially challenging just because it's men and women that I'm about to talk about, but I know as a female-bodied person, I have felt objectified, you know, by men all of my life. And yet I have had a lot of partners who ask me the question or just say like, I want to feel objectified by you in sex. And how often I say to myself, like, I have no idea how to do that.
Yes. We had a lot of conversations about this.
Sure.
Is it okay if I shared?
Go for it. Okay. It just basically, I wanted to ask the question, like, how the fuck do I do that? Are there tools, are there good ways to go about approaching that in a way that will be, you know, great for my partner?
I call it taking as a service.
If you can really drop into, like, not touching them how you think they're going to love it, but really, really drop into like what turns you on about their body and how can you really take it. And it's hot when they know that they can give you the gift of that.
Yeah.
You know, and vice versa. Once you really get into taking, then you can be objectified and actually feels good.
Sure.
Because you are going, to like take pleasure in my body and my pussy and my ass, you know, whatever the thing is, right?
I mean, it's such a beautiful thing because it is so very common to hear that from women that is like, I've been objectified my whole life and it doesn't feel good. And the reason it doesn't feel good is because you didn't agree to it.
Sure. Right. Yeah, geez.
And when you do agree to it, it feels fucking amazing. Mm-hmm. And also, you know, you may have partners, men or women, that yearned for that. They yearn to feel taken from and sexy and desired. Mm-hmm. And so when your body is being used as a tool for someone else's desire, that's a beautiful thing. It's like one of the most nourishing and healing things as a man to feel taken from in that way.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And there's something also that in your nervous system that can become healed and nourished, like on a deep level. So if you have had things in the past that have been felt really wrong, there's a way to bring it back in to actually feel really good about it. Yeah. And there's a lot of deep healing there.
Yeah.
It's funny you mentioned that because I had an experience kind of on the opposite side from what Emily was talking about at the workshop where we were doing the exercise where you would partner up and ask to do something to the other person for your own pleasure, like we're talking about. And
I do this to you for my pleasure?
Yeah. Right. And, you know, my partner asked, she's like, could I sit behind you and just kind of like touch or squeeze like your shoulders and like your muscles or your arms or your chest or whatever. And, you know, it's like, sure. Yeah. And I had this weird thing of at first feeling like, oh, I'm getting a massage or something. Right. Mm-hmm. And then being like, wait, no, this is for her. And I just had this, like, this doesn't compute. Like, I'm just sitting here and she's getting something out of it. Like, as a man, I feel like for the most part, my body has been valued for what it can do and not just what it is.
Wow. Yeah.
And that was this.
I feel like women, it's very much been the opposite.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I thought about the fact that when it was that part of the workshop and I was trying to think of like, what would I want to take from a male partner for my own pleasure? And I'm like, I don't know because I've been so conditioned to like, he's the observer, I'm the observed.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm the consumed thing, he's the thing that does the consuming.
Yeah. Interesting language there.
And like, I think that a lot of us have been conditioned to kind of, to learn how to take pleasure in that one way or another.
Even slip into enduring.
Or slipping into just enduring it, you know, because this is just what the dynamic is. Mm. And so, and the thing is that it's like when I sat with it and it's like, I know there's definitely a deep part of me that would love to take, especially from a male partner for my pleasure, but has like never even been, that's never seen the light of day, really.
We can practice when we're done.
That could be such a hot like date night, like even setting the tension of like, hey, there's something I really want to play with you. Would you be willing to play? And they can go, yeah. And then you can kind of just lay out the ground, you know, the parameters and try it. Even with simple touch or massage or kissing or whatever, it's...
And you have to remind your partner too, like, as men, the doing is hard to break.
Yes.
Your partner will reach up to participate and you have to smack their hand. When she's taking from me, she'll just like, I'll reach up, I'll be like, and it just smacks my hand down. And I'm like, oh yeah, right. I'm the fuck toy right now.
Yeah.
And like, loving it.
And loving it. And then when you can really drop into that space, I honestly have never felt anything more nourishing sexually than being in a totally non-doing pleasurable state.
Mm-hmm.
And actually it took not a long time, but a fair amount of time to rewire my arousal.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Because laying on my back, I couldn't even really access an erection or arousal for a bit in there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I just had to really drop in and relax. And so that's something that often, like I will present to male clients when they're having issues with erection, where sometimes you don't want to be doing, your body's not in a space of doing, and actually blood flow to your penis or your cock or whatever is about relaxation. Mm. So if you can get out of your mind and into your body and relax, and all of a sudden there's this access to arousal that's a different one than we're used to.
Yeah.
Than we're used to consuming. I like that you use that, like the consumed and the consumer.
Yeah.
That we're not always in that space. So there's like a real gentleness and tenderness that comes from dropping into that relaxing space.
Yeah. Right, definitely. Amazing.
Waiting on a tax return? Hopefully it ends up in your hands. Fraudulent tax returns due to identity theft increased by 30% in 2023. If you're in a bind this tax season, LifeLock can help. Our U.S.-based restoration specialists are experts dedicated to helping solve your identity theft issues. And all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package. So we'll reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. Help protect your information this tax season with LifeLock. Save up to 25% your first year at LifeLock.com/aware.
For a long time now, we've been fans of AdamandEve.com for getting sex toys or lingerie or accessories, things like that. It's just a fantastic resource with a huge selection. And now, not only do we have a fantastic offer, but we also have a promo code that will work on adammail.com and evestoys.com, which are their sites specifically for LGBTQ audiences. And our code is fantastic. It's 50% off of almost any item in the store and free discreet shipping when you use our code MULTI.
Yes, we love AdamandEve.com and have for years. They are our oldest and longest sponsor, and they just keep on giving great gifts to us and to our listeners. You can bring more pleasure and satisfaction into your bedroom by going to AdamandEve.com, AdamMail.com, or EvesToys.com and select any one item. It can be, you know, an adventurous new toy or anything you desire, something fun, something sexy, whatever sounds good.
So just enter offer code MULTI at checkout and you'll get 50% off almost any item plus free shipping. That's MULTI, M-U-L-T-I at adamandeve.com, adammail.com, or evestoys.com. This is an exclusive offer that is specific to this podcast and it's better than any offer that is currently available on their site. So again, use code MULTI to get you not just the 50% discount, but also the 100% free shipping. Code MULTI.
As we've mentioned, all three of us had these really interesting, profound, different experiences as a result of the workshop. And one of the exercises that you did was an exercise of kind of helped people to figure out what yes and no feels like in the body. And so, you know, we partnered up, Emily and I partnered up, mm-hmm. and we had to ask each other these different questions of like, you know, may I do this or will you do this? But the answer from the other person had to be a no every single time. And then we also, you know, switched to where the answer had to be a yes, but you didn't do the action. You just had to answer yes to the question. And that was so interesting to me because for me, her asking me a bunch of questions of things that would have been a yes answer, things that I would have liked to have done, but have to say no. I think, again, for me as a woman, I don't have a lot of that experience of saying no when it is a yes. It's more of like saying yes or giving an implicit yes when it's really a no inside my body. And so that was like a really, really fascinating, brand new experience for me of saying no when it is a yes. And I know that there were some men in the workshop having the new experience of saying yes when it is a deep, disgusted no.
Yeah, a lot of body. Men seemed very disgusted at times.
It seems my impression of like not that you never had that experience before. Yeah. Is that something that people uncover frequently in your workshops?
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. I mean, just getting in touch with the different answers and how they feel in the body, because sometimes we don't really even notice that. And so it's something happens in people like, wow, I said something and that wasn't true inside. Like, how do I get these two things to match, you know, which is the big aha. What about you, Cosmo?
Yeah, I mean, two things. One, I was so curious to ask the men specifically what was causing that reaction, but I wanted to respect their individual space between them.
I definitely tried to push my partner because I was paired with a male partner for that. Yeah, and I definitely was like, I'm going to push him on the things that I'll ask to do that I know that he has to say yes to. Not that we're going to do it, but just so he could have that experience.
Yeah.
And he was one of the men who made that comment of, of like, wow,
that felt disgusting in my body.
Right.
Yeah. And that exercise is specifically for that. It's about imprinting the recognition of what something feels like that's opposite to what you're saying. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then being able to take that out into your other, you know, your everyday life. And not specifically, again, I like to keep saying that we work within the realm of sexuality, but these tools are about accessing this to better your life in general, right. Not just your sex life.
Yeah. Like someone wants to borrow your car, sure. And when inside you're like, fuck, you know, like
we really
want it to match. You know, it's really beautiful when you're really in integrity and someone can receive your yes, they can also receive your no and your maybe. Mm. Like that. This is the whole culture that we're, you know,
trying to
maybe even growing, celebrate yeah. it.
Celebrating, yeah, right. celebrating all the answers, you know. Yeah. For
one of the women in the workshop said, wow, I just realized that I thought that was a baseline of how I was supposed to feel. I just thought that's how I felt.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then she said, oh, I don't have to feel that way. I don't just have to say yes. Like when she had the opportunity to say no, she said that there was a resolution. There was something that shifted in her body that felt at ease, that felt different. And that's like, wow, like that. Again, sure, it applies to sexuality, but that goes so much deeper than sexuality. That's at the grocery store. That's letting someone budge in line in front of you. That's something that your doctor says to you, take this medication. Yes, no problem. Did you, you know, like being able to feel the truth of what that feels like and then have the recognition of how to start implementing that into your life.
Yeah.
So otherwise that, and you feel it. Yeah.
Yeah. Otherwise you're just overriding that natural system, which always feels like shit.
Yeah.
You know,
our bodies are so finely tuned. They're such beautiful instruments. Mm-hmm. And when we get into the habit, the pattern, like you said something, Dedeker, earlier about just about slipping into enduring and disassociating. And so that we have these, you know, maybe you have the opportunity with a lover where it's a beautiful experience, but you're so used to slipping there that you're not even really fully present with it. And so it's about being present with life by not putting our bodies into a constant state of trauma or distrust with our choices.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And just constantly saying yes all the time because I'm so bad at saying no. And that means like, I had 3 restaurant jobs at one time because I couldn't say no to 2 of them.
To the shifter.
No, yeah. Or just like somebody was like, oh, I want you to work with me. And I said, sure, I'll do it. And then I never had a life, for example.
Right.
And just things like that and really being able to say no and mean it and be okay with that and not just constantly say yes. It's so profound and it needs to happen, especially for those of us who are shitty at it.
Seriously.
Yeah. And Dedeker, you said something earlier too about that you may not have really specific large traumas in your life, but like I call that micro traumas that we're like, we all are carrying a certain level of trauma in our body, even if we don't have something major to reflect upon. Oh, it's this and we have to get over that. It's actually these tiny little traumas along the way that build up into this like,
yeah.
Fuck right. No. And hopefully you can come out with that and then start to celebrate your no and celebrate your yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The example of from the workshop of, you know, of men having that experience of saying yes when they mean no for the first time, I feel like that's super powerful. And that's something that I wish there was a way to get that out there more. Mm-hmm. I found that for me, you know, the first time I experienced that in like a workshop setting was a different consent workshop, which was a similar thing of like asking for something and you have to say no, or then asking for something and you have to say yes. But what I found was for me in my life, the first time I really experienced that myself was when I first sort of opened myself up to having sexual relationships with men. And that then all of a sudden I started experiencing some of these things, not right away, but just those little things. And then some slightly more major ones where it was like, wow, I've hated everything about what just happened. Mm. And I'm like really like traumatized and upset about it, but I never said no to it. Mm-hmm. And it's that thing that I had never understood before when I was only the male in a heterosexual relationship with women, because it was following these gender roles that... Yeah. We don't even question. Mm-hmm. And for me, that was like a shocking, I had a lot to deal with and like process in coming to terms with that. And then it put my own interactions from the past in a different light. It was just like, fuck me. Like I suck. Like I can't believe, cause I just didn't know
that. Get to feel it.
I think just like if more of us more of us men, especially heterosexual men, but I think really everybody could have that experience mm-hmm. of seeing what those are like. I mean, my hope is that those men from the workshop are able to kind of go back and go, geez, I didn't quite realize what my female partners were getting at if they ever said like, oh, I felt pressured into this thing, or like I couldn't say no, or, you know, something like that to mm-hmm. go, oh God, like, yeah, I have a taste like. Of what that feels like.
That's a really and big it, thing yeah. to know right now yeah. in this very volatile time when yeah. I think, yeah, things like that have been questioned and so few people actually know what that experience is like.
Yeah.
Yeah. yeah.
And then caring.
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. So instead of being defensive, oh, well, you said
sure,
yes.
Yes.
Right. Instead of caring, there's two things. Both caring so that you want to know and you're like, thank you for sharing. That's a vulnerable thing to share to a partner that actually mm-hmm. I felt like what we were doing was not, my body wasn't totally consenting to it. Mm-hmm. And then from the other side is also being solution oriented. So not blaming yeah. when maybe you did consent to something and then you slipped out of consent within your body, but did not vocalize that to your partner.
Yeah.
Mm. So from where they're coming from, they're in a place of consent. They're in a mindset that the person they're engaging with is a consensual act.
Yeah.
If you don't communicate that. So that's why we have to be in this like solution-based space around educating with language and experience so that we don't start pointing fingers and creating this divide between the masculine and the feminine and start yeah, right. claiming toxic masculinity when really it's a lack of education.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Not in all cases. This is like void of very specific abuse scenarios.
Right.
But when we're just dealing with individuals interacting on a regular basis, there are lots of traumas that are happening just because of not having the education around language.
Right, yeah. right. Yeah. That reminds me of a story I want to share with a partner of mine that we were, like, I forget how we even came to this realization, but like there was a particular like sex act that both of us would do like to each other. And for me, it was always like enduring. It was always just enduring. It was like, well, he enjoys this. This is good for him. I'm going to endure this. Mm-hmm. Until it somehow came out that he felt the same exact thing. That yeah. he was like, he was enduring it too. Because he assumed
oh, wow.
like,
oh, my
she
goodness.
Enjoys this.
Yeah. Who is
I'm gonna
this
do
for?
It.
Oh, I've had
and
this talk
like, I'll just
with
deal
people.
With it. And yeah. we were both just like, yeah. like mind blown. We're like, well, let's not fucking do that anymore. But again, it was that same thing where it was like, instead of even saying, hey, this doesn't feel good. Or, hey, can I try... Mm. doing it a different way, I automatically was just like, I'm just going to endure it. And then the fact that he did too. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And talk about just how much we need like that communication or just even just one person to finally speak up and be like, hey, actually, you know what? Like, let's change this.
Is this working for you?
Yeah. yeah.
It's not
yeah.
really like...
Exactly.
Yeah, because if somebody is in their pleasure and you're allowing, maybe you're not enduring, maybe you are enduring and you mm-hmm. can find a place of allowing.
Right.
But because you know it's for their pleasure. But if nobody's in their pleasure, why are we doing this?
Yeah, exactly. yeah,
who
exactly.
is it for?
It was that one. Yeah. It's like, really, yeah, no one's in their pleasure.
Yeah, let's not do this ever
yeah.
again.
Yeah.
yeah. yeah.
So when you have a new partner or when you just meet someone even at, you know, at the grocery store or anyone in general who doesn't have a language for what we're talking about here, what do you do? I mean, how can you sort of introduce maybe like a new partner to something like this? I kind of right off the bat.
Can I just have a quick one
ahead.
And then go.
Yeah,
I laugh because my wife, Caitlin, on every first date walks the people through the wheel of consent.
Wow.
And I just laugh because
she
I'm like.
She do it like on a little cocktail napkin.
Yeah, and like she just draws it out. She's like, just so you know, in our interactions, like this is the language that I would like to know you understand
wow.
before okay. engaging. And,
that's great.
Oh,
and I mean, she's a sex educator and so it comes very comfortable.
Of course.
but there are tools to begin that. And so.
What? Yeah, I mean, sometimes it's not always appropriate to like bust out the wheel, even on a napkin. Okay, so before we make out, we're gonna
talk about those.
There's a time and a place for it. I mean, if this is someone that you're really like wanting to maybe, you know, be a partnership or date or something like that, then you like you turn it into a game. That's what I do anyway.
Oh.
Like, so, ooh, okay, do you wanna practice? You know, or actually, what I will do is like ask the person, how do you like to be touched? And they're like you know, it's pretty public, like what I do. So there's curiosity around, ooh, what do you teach? You know, what are your workshops mm-hmm. like? So it could be like a conversation at dinner around the concepts of the wheel of consent, just to get to know each other. And then that could turn into like, ooh, do you want to see how this plays out in a sexy game or something like
right.
that?
Nice.
You're going to find, once yeah. you like learn the concepts of the wheel of consent, you're going to find ways how it goes through your body and how it comes out. In your interactions. Like if I'm at a play party for example, I will just use certain languaging, but I'm not going to turn it into like an educational thing because it's not really the time or the place for that. Because you're in a loud place, there's bodies everywhere. There's small ways that you can do it inside your body and then also see what their response is. And then you can turn the conversation to, what would you like, you know, for your pleasure, you know, and really check in. So you're actually giving them the experience of the wheel without drawing it out.
Right.
Yeah. You know? And later you can follow it up or maybe it comes in a different way. You know?
And there's Betty Martin again on her website has this 3-minute game anyone can download and play with their partners. Mm-hmm.
Okay. And we've done it at play parties too. Well, a lot of play parties will have like an educational piece in the beginning, right? Mm-hmm. Or like in a speaker or something like that. And so we'll present the 3-minute game and bring out tools and like fun toys and like little things and we'll get people into their bodies and like play the game, have the, you know, the 3-minute game. It's a contained time to actually experience what do I want with this person and how do I ask for it? And then that turns into the play party, which everyone has a basic baseline of the language.
And I mean, anytime you can lengthen play, that's fun. Like if you're like, I mean, even with a new partner, without the whole explanation, if you just say, I really like this, I like to be asked where you touch me and how you want to touch me. And then all of a sudden it's like, whoa, there's this charge like, right? I would like to touch your shoulder. Could I kiss your neck? You know, and it becomes this really fun, super charged and actually really, really sexy engagement.
Right.
Super hot.
That really stretches out the pleasure too, right? Why, like, sometimes we rush in and, and that's where before everyone's genitals are ready and before your bodies are integrated. And so it gives an opportunity for energies to align before moving into these more intense expressions of pleasure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think just the idea that a new partner and you would have this from the beginning sounds so awesome instead of like, and obviously people are learning this and they can learn it even in an established relationship, but coming at a new relationship with this and just having that be the way in which you interact with each other from the beginning sounds wonderful.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it's such a powerful tool to bring in even in established relationships of like, wow, this changes how I'm going to communicate and treat you now. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. I just wanted to, you know, because I think that, like you mentioned, that, you know, you don't have to bust out the cocktail napkin, that you can change your language and how you actively ask someone how they like to be touched or ask them, do you want this faster, slower? Mm-hmm. Is this pressure still working for you? Or do you want it lighter? Whatever. I found for me that recently it's also been not just about changing the way I talk to the other person, but just like really trying to have integrity about speaking up if I am enduring something or speaking up if something's not working for me. And that has been like the hardest habit to break after so many years of just kind of taking it or just kind of like settling for like, well, this is kind of pleasurable. I'll just kind of take what I can get. And that's really hard to do. I've never regretted it. Anytime that I have, you know, anytime that I have actually spoken up and said like, oh, actually, could you do this? Could you touch me this way? Can you try this angle? That of course it feels better. And then it's so much better, but it's still so hard to break that ingrained habit after so many years of doing it.
I loved in the workshop when we were doing that, when it was the other way where it's I'm doing something to you for you, that you said, you know, to be giving direction throughout of like, oh, could you do that a little bit harder, a little softer? Could you move onto my shoulder or whatever it was? Like if it was a massage or something, was that the person receiving that should just say thank you.
Yes.
Rather than taking it personally about you when they're just telling you what their body likes. Uh-huh. But I find that I feel like I've gotten comments from both of you that you've had partners, especially male partners, who you'll say, oh, can you do that a little bit differently? And they kind of seem miffed about it or just don't take the note.
It's or either, say sorry.
It's either saying sorry or it's like taking it personally. Or the one that really baffles me is like, they just don't take the note where I can say 3 times in the space of 5 minutes, can you go a little slower?
Have you tried
go a little slower?
Have you tried saying like, I would really like it if you would slow down? You can turn it into dirty talk too. So it's not like I'm going to give these instructions because it can interrupt the intimacy. So
that changes
maybe there's a different way that you could say it.
True. I could definitely try that.
Wow, that's interesting. I feel like I've done something like that sometimes again, to kind of soften it so they don't feel like I'm saying you're doing it badly. Yeah.
Yeah. Get your inner coach out.
No, that's interesting. That's really interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was just going to, I also wanted to mention that I love the idea of like drawing this on the cocktail napkin and having the explanation because we've actually talked before about doing the same sort of thing with talking about sexual health and STIs,
right?
Is to talk about it just as a conversation piece during a first date, for example.
Absolutely.
Of just, oh, you know what? Yeah. I was just listening. And we always love to give the excuse of, I was just listening to this podcast. When they were talking STIs. And like, oh, I just had my checkup a couple months ago. And these were my results. And I learned these cool things from the podcast. Of just, so it's not like, I'm asking about your status because I want to have sex with you. It's like before we're even there. Because that's, people are always like, well, I don't want to kill the mood there. Yeah. Or I don't want to ask about it early because then they're like, whoa, why are you asking about this? I'm not, we're not there yet. Is to just bring it up conversationally. And I feel like this could be sort of the exact same thing of just in that sort of getting to know you conversation. It's like, have that in your repertoire of like, this is a thing I bring up on first dates to talk about. This is a cool thing I learned about. I found this really fascinating.
Like, this is a thing I'm really interested in.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Right. And then you're also promoting good practice.
Totally.
Right. Whether you're going to date this person or not.
Right.
Yeah. And then they're just like, easier. Oh, they learn about Betty Martin's Wheel of Consent, which is going to affect every other relationship in their life.
Right.
They're learning about, you know, that you can go get tested regularly and how that impacts, you know, relating to partners.
Yeah. But that, and I think that, in part of having that conversation, it gives you a chance early on before you're in a potentially more compromising situation to see how they react to those conversations.
That's a big one. Like if I meet someone and I can just tell by their body language that they can't really access their yes and no and maybe, you know, I would just treat it differently, you know, and maybe I wouldn't engage. I would make the choice how far I want to engage. Same with STIs. Once you know the information, you can make an informed decision on how am I going to interact with this person now with this information.
Yeah, but just even how they react.
If they're like super uncomfortable.
Or even for some people I know, like if they talk about STIs and someone uses terms like, oh, well, I'm clean.
Right.
That to them, it's an indication of like, you don't really know enough about this.
Yeah, yeah,
so
absolutely.
Let's maybe not until we can either have that conversation or maybe just not, period.
Right.
And I could see with this a similar thing where like, if they immediately go to a defensive place or like a legalistic place about it, you might be like, I don't think we're ready to go here.
Yeah.
Because you're not capable of having this conversation with me in a way that feels respectful to me and all that.
I very much felt that where I've just, you know, maybe met someone, said, let's have a date and not necessarily bringing up specifics around STI testing or the Wheel of Consent, but just generally interacting with them and like a lack of eye contact or confidence in there. And I can already sense some type of lack of clarity or power imbalance. And it's just like, okay, well, maybe this relationship isn't going to move into this. They may be, you know, attractive and all of that, but are they able to meet you where you're at?
Right.
Not to say that it's better or worse, but just where you're energetically playing in.
Yeah. Definitely. Well, I feel like we could talk about these things forever,
but
we only have an hour-long podcast. Okay. So can you please tell our listeners where they can find out more information about you and the work that you do?
You can look up my website, which is sexlovesoul.com. And with all the new hoopla around wording on the internet, I might need to change that. So you can, so I'm Melissa Mango and you can look up sexlovesoul.com and you can also find out more about me through Happy Touch. And Cosmo, I'll let you drop the things on that.
Yeah, so you can find us at happytouch.ca. Another project that I'm working on is called the Apollo Project, which is sensual retreats for men. And so that's the-apollo-project.com. Another interesting one, just that I touched on it a little bit, is there's a company I work for that does sensual retreats for women. This is all like intensive 5-6 day retreats where we get to go through this, all of this information in practice somewhere in a full immersion.
Wow.
And so that's a company called Back to the Body. And that's the founder, Pamela Madison, is a mentor and just a beautiful, inspired woman. Also, our training, we're somatic sex educators, so you can go to the SSEA website, which is somaticsexeducators.com or .ca. .com, I think. Yeah. So
we'll look it up. We'll
find it. So people can explore what we actually do. And if you're interested, eventually, probably in the next month or 2 months, we're going to have an app launched around helping people find access to practitioners so that they can explore these types of things in a very safe container.
Yeah.
And learn how to then go engage with partners in this way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Fantastic.
Excellent. Well, that was great.
All right. Thank you so much for taking the time and letting us come into your lovely studio here to do this. If you, the listener, would like to have your question or comment played on our show, you can call our number at area code 678
MULTI 05.
Or you can leave us a voice message or an audio message on the Multi Emory Facebook page. You can also email us at info@multiemory.com or send us a message on Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram. To support our show and join our private Facebook community, go to patreon.com/multiemory. Multi Emory is created and produced by Emily Matlack, Dedeker Winston, and me, Jace Lindgren. Our episodes are edited by Mauricio. Our social media wizard is Will McMillan. Our theme song is Forms I Know I Did by Josh and Anand from the Fractal Cave EP. The full transcript of this episode is available on its page at multiemory.com.